Thank you for standing by, and welcome to the FirstGroup plc pre-close trading update call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question and answer session, at which time, if you wish to ask a question, you will need to press star one on your telephone. I must advise you that this conference is being recorded today on Wednesday, the 8th of October, 2014. I would now like to hand the conference over to your speaker today, Chris Church. Please go ahead, sir.
Thanks, Martin. Good morning. Thank you for joining the FirstGroup pre-close trading update for the 6 months to 30th of September. I am joined this morning by Nick Chevis, Rachel Borthwick, and Faisal Tubber. As is our usual practice, I will summarize the trading performance, and then I will be happy to take any questions you may have. But before I get on to the trading, let me say a few words about the separate announcement on ScotRail that you would have seen this morning. Clearly, at this stage, I can't say much on the details, but the first comment to make is that having operated ScotRail for a decade and delivered significant improvements on every measurable score during that time, we are very disappointed not to be taking the franchise forward. However, despite that disappointment, today's news does not alter our medium-term financial targets or our plans for the rail division. As you know, we aim to participate in franchise competitions with the objective of achieving earnings on a par with the last round of franchising with an acceptable level of risk. We will continue to operate First ScotRail until the handover on the 1st of April 2015. So moving on to trading, in summary, for the group in the period, trading was in line with our expectations. Also, our transformation plans continue to make good progress, and there is no change to our medium-term objectives. Each division has performed within the range of our expectations, with student and rail towards the upper end, Greyhound towards the lower end, and transit and UK bus where we expected them to be. As you know, the financial results are normally second half weighted, particularly in student and UK bus, and I will return to this later. So now turning to each division in a little more detail. In student, we have been encouraged by the outcome of our plans and actions to improve the returns on our contract portfolio. The pricing trends we outlined at the quarter one update continued throughout the whole bid season. For the contracts due for renewal for the 2014-15 school year, which represents approximately one-third of our total portfolio, we achieved average price increases of approximately 4.5%. On contracts that had previously produced very low margins, we achieved an even higher rate of price increase. This contrasts with the increase of between 1 and 2% that we saw last year. You will recall from the Capital Markets Day in January that 36% of our contracts achieved a margin of 5% or less. We expect this percentage to be below 30% for 14-15, and then, with all things being equal, to reduce this further over the next couple of years as the rest of the contracts come up for renewal. Despite these price increases, we achieved a retention rate of approximately 90% on contracts due for renewal. This is equivalent to approximately 96% on the entire contract portfolio. As you know, we modeled a range of outcomes. At the optimistic end, revenues would be approximately flat compared with 13-14. More pessimistically, we modeled a decrease of 5%. Taking the bid season results together with organic growth, share shift wins, and a very small bolt-on acquisition, I expect revenues will be around the top end of this range. The positive impact of the repricing on the contracts rebid this year will be mitigated to some extent by the negative impact of inflation exceeding the contract price inflators on the two-thirds of our contracts that will be rebid over the next 2 years. In addition to our focus on bidding, we continue to work on reducing costs through the adoption of consistent best practice across the portfolio of 500 or so locations and tight overhead control. As you know, we are aiming to achieve an additional $50 million per annum of cost savings over the next 3 years to add to the $100 million per annum we have achieved to date. As we have previously guided, with revenues at the upper end of our expectations, we expect to achieve an operating margin for the full year in excess of 7.5%. In the range of 7.5% to 8% is our expectation. In the medium term, we remain focused on achieving double-digit margins. I mentioned earlier the half-one, half-two splits, and we have previously guided that due to the timing of Easter this year, the normal second-half weighting for student will be even higher this year. This is the main reason why the first-half US dollar revenue is expected to be approximately 1.6% lower than the first half of the previous year. Turning now to transit, this business continues to perform well. In half one, revenue growth was approximately 9%, and for the full year, I expect it to be 4% due to the timing of a number of contracts starting up and rolling off in the various periods. I expect full year margins to be in line with our medium-term target of approximately 7%. And I remind you that these margins are achieved in what is a relatively low capital-intensive business. Greyhound continues to grow with like-for-like revenues up approximately 2.7%, which was at the lower end of our expectations. For those of you who follow the headlines in the US, we are seeing the same as the likes of Walmart, Target, and the dollar stores, who have a similar customer demographics to Greyhound. Although the US economy is growing as a whole, this is not yet the case for the specific market sector relevant to us. As in previous periods, our point-to-point brands continue to perform well with like-for-like growth of approximately 6%. As we have previously described, we are now much more able to flex our costs in line with the economic situation, and we expect to hold half-on margins broadly flat year on year for the first half. The plan to transform the Greyhound model with increased use of mobile apps and the implementation of airline-style yield management, real-time pricing, loyalty discounts, smart ticketing, and so forth, continues on track. We remain confident that all this work will support the achievement of our margin target of 12% in the medium term. UK Bus is on track to deliver positive revenue and volume growth in the half, with both just over 2% on a like-for-like basis. Within that, commercial volumes are growing faster than the overall figures in the 3 to 4% range, and concession volumes year on year were up a little in quarter one and down slightly in quarter two. We are also seeing a continuing trend towards increasing sales of weekly and monthly tickets. Although the yield is a little lower than day tickets in the short term, they demonstrate increasing passenger loyalty, which is obviously good news for our longer-term success in UK Bus. We continue to see variability in the underlying economic strength of our individual markets, with parts of Scotland and other local communities having had a disappointing second quarter, whilst Bristol and Manchester, for example, were particularly strong. Overall, we are in line with our expectations for revenue growth and margin improvement in the first half. We expect to make more progress in both of these measures in the second half as inflationary fare increases are implemented on anniversary dates. Also, there are expected to be less one-off restructuring costs impacting operating profits in the second half. Turning now to rail, which continues to perform very well with strong passenger volume growth and good financial performance. Like-for-like revenue for the first half are expected to be up around 6.5%. First Great Western returned to more normal commercial terms from effectively a nil contribution in the first half of 13-14. Apart from this morning's ScotRail news, the other franchising update since quarter one was our shortlisting for the TransPennine Express competition. You will remember we are currently contracted to run TPE through to March 15, and we are negotiating a direct award with the DfT to run it until February 2016. We are also in discussions with the DfT concerning a potential longer-term direct award on First Great Western beyond the current end date of September 2015. And of course, we await the outcome of the East Coast competition, which is expected in November. On cash, there is no change to our previous guidance for a cash outflow of £100 million for the full year, principally driven by the working capital outflow at the end of the First Capital Connect franchise. So, in summary, trading during the first half has been in line with our expectations for the group. The continued challenging economic backdrop in Greyhound and parts of UK Bus were a bit of a headwind, but the student pricing and cost efficiency progress and good performances from transit and rail offset this. On a business of this size, and clearly with the bus businesses going through major transformation programs, there will inevitably be some divisions performing at the higher end and some at the lower end of our expectations. So I am pleased that as a group, we are on track in the half. I am also pleased we are making good progress with all of our transformation plans and are on track to achieve our financial targets over the medium term. Now I will hand back to Martin so we can take any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel that request, please press the hash key. Your first question comes from the line of Edward Stanford. Please ask a question.
Good morning, everybody. Just two questions, please, on rail. You've been very clear that you're targeting sort of rail earnings in line with previous bid seasons. Looking back over the sort of profits First Group have made in rail, that seems to be about 100 million. Is that the right number to think about as a target for the medium term? And secondly, could you refresh my memory on the working capital implications of the loss of ScotRail when you have to hand it over to the new operator? Thank you.
Morning, Edward. The simple answer to your first question is yes, £100 million of profit is our target. That's effectively equivalent to two large franchises and one small franchise. And that remains our target despite this morning's news. Clearly, ScotRail was in the smaller category, and with all the franchises coming up for renewal and obviously our existing portfolio, that's why we remain confident of getting to that target. On working capital, the ring-fenced cash will leave us on the 1st of April 2015, so on the first day of the new year. That does move around, but we expect that to be of the order of 50 million, and then there is an additional, probably around 20 million that relates to a maintenance bond where we've been given money to perform maintenance. Any of that not conducted, we will then obviously hand that back. So the overall impact will be around £70 million.
Sorry, can I just ask one follow-up, if I may? With the ending of First Capital Connect, were there any benefits from the sort of termination contract decisions and discussions that take place at the end of every contract?
You're absolutely right. Those conversations do happen, but those are happening exactly as we expected them, so there's no change in guidance.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. Your next question comes from the line of Gerald Coe. Please ask a question.
Morning, everyone. Gerald Coe from Liberum here. A few questions, starting maybe with First Students. What percentage of contracts are up for bid next year? One-third this year seems to be quite large. Secondly, on First Student, how does the better-than-expected outturn in the season that's just gone change your strategy for next year? What are your thoughts on the trade-off between the retention rate and price? And finally, on First Great Western. I mean, could you just clarify what sort of extension you're potentially talking to DfT about? What's the risk that that might end up going to open tender? And what's the timeline for a decision there? Is there a risk that that gets caught up in any sort of pre-election shutdown? Thanks.
Thanks very much, gentlemen. I'm trying to write those down as rapidly as I can, so I'll try and cover each of those off. I'm sure you'll tell me if I miss anything. On student, the average length of our contract portfolio is just over 3 years, so I'd expect broadly a third of contracts to come up for renewal each year. So I wouldn't say that a third this year was particularly large. I'd expect it to be broadly the same amount next year. In terms of the overall policy, clearly this year has been successful both in terms of retention rate and pricing. We're in the process of obviously reviewing all of that because obviously there's lots and lots of individual contracts and different approaches in different markets. As you would expect, we're reviewing the outcome of that, and that will flavour how we approach next year's bidding season. And again, it will also depend upon what market conditions are at that stage and probably more specifically what happens in each individual market, which is different. So, as I'm sure you'd expect, I'm not going to give away our commercial bidding strategy in any great detail, but broadly, we were very pleased with this year, and that will feed into next year. In terms of rail, First Great Western, there are currently discussions going on for an extension of anything up to 5 years. That's clearly up to the DfT on that decision. In terms of timeline, these discussions are ongoing. We would expect the DfT at some stage to put out their refranchising timetable because they put that out every 6 months, and the last time they did that was around March time. In terms of the absolute detail of the contract, under the franchising rules, that will be next March, so March 15, because a PIN notice was put out last March, and under the rules, you then have to go 12 months. In terms of, I'm trying to think of your last question.
The risk of going to open market, I think you'd have to say that's quite low, given the DfT have already stated their intent.
Gerald, did I cover all of your questions, or did we cover all of your questions?
Just a slight follow-up. I mean, at 5 years, isn't that getting a bit on the long side in terms of DfT may have stated its intention, but someone could potentially challenge that and say that they would be willing to bid against that spec?
Yeah, that's clearly, obviously, for the DfT, but the key is the £7.5 billion worth of investment on that railroad that's going to happen during that period. And clearly, with our knowledge of running that railway and obviously what is required with such a major infrastructure change, then that's obviously one of the considerations.
Yeah,
and obviously what the government is looking for is stability during that period.
Sure. But just clarify, that's Reading, or is there something else going on Great Western?
It's new trains, it's the electrification, all the signalling. There's a whole remit. I mean, Reading has obviously been going through a major change, but no, it's far, far bigger than that.
Right, okay, thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of John Lawson. Please ask your question.
Good morning, everyone. I've got three questions, if you don't mind. Firstly, can you just refresh us what you're assuming on rail bid costs for this year and perhaps any guidance for next year? Secondly, you obviously flagged that Greyhound has been disappointing. I just wondered whether you could update us any thoughts on what you might think like-for-like revenues in constant currency terms might grow out this year. Should we assume first half, or do you think it might weaken further? And perhaps any guidance on where you think the margins might be in the scheme of things compared with the 12% longer-term target, perhaps, and also comment whether you think you are behind or ahead in progress on that. Finally, on U.K. bus margins, any guidance for this year? I obviously appreciate you've got a longer-term target, but any thoughts for this year, please?
Morning, John. Okay. Bid costs for this year, there's no change to the guidance that we have given previously, which is around 15 million pounds. Going into next year, it will very much depend upon the bidding timetable as to what we spend. Generally, if you look at last year, it was 20 million pounds, so hopefully that will give you sort of broad guidance. Yeah. Next year, it's in that sort of broad range, maybe a little lower. Absolutely right on Greyhound. As I said when I was speaking, it was at the lower end of our expectations, and that is principally driven by the economy. You asked for more thoughts. The way I look at this is if you go back to quarter four last year, the revenue growth was 2.4%. It increased to 3.4% in quarter one, and then in quarter two, it was 2.4%. The outlier, if anything, was the first quarter, and the reason that that was higher, as we talked about at the time, was the very low comparative in the first quarter last year. You'll remember that was a particularly difficult period. In terms of margins and how we look forwards, as I mentioned in my comments, I'd expect margins to be broadly flat in the first half. I'd expect to see some improvement in margins in the second half, not least, as you'll remember, second half last year, margins were impacted by the severe weather. Obviously, I'm assuming normal weather conditions. Going forwards, again, I see no change to our 12% medium-term targets. Obviously, the economy's not helping us at the moment, and in due course, one would assume that it naturally would. More importantly, it's about our yield management systems. So far, the early stages of what we're doing there has gone well. If you look at what's happened in the first half, we've continued to increase the amount of sales of tickets on the web. Now, certainly more than 50% of our sales come through the web. More importantly is that we've seen a significant increase in mobile sales, ticket sales. Of the web sales, mobile ticket sales have gone from around 10% of web sales to north of 25%, which is obviously key and just, I think, reflects modern society. Again, that part of it is going well. The key is the new yield management systems, which, as you know, will be coming in over the next 12, 18 months. For those of you who attended the Capital Markets Day back in January, you'll remember the slide that Dave Leach put up, which showed that an additional passenger, additional one passenger across our fleet adds $11 million to our profit. Obviously, that is a straight drop-through. That's why we remain very confident of getting to our 12% over the medium term. On bus, no change to the guidance that we gave previously. It's for a slight improvement on margins year-on-year in the half, and then that increases. If you look at where consensus is, there's just over 1% increase in margin from last year. As we drive forwards, the fare increases that we've talked about in the second half, and also, as I mentioned when I spoke, there was some one-off restructuring costs that hit the first half that will not be repeated in the second half. Around that 6%, a little bit less than 6% margin for the second half, for the full year.
Right. Okay.
I think I addressed all your questions.
I think so. I'll digest them, and if I've got any more, I'll come back. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Anand Date. Please ask your question.
Yeah. Hi. Morning, everyone. I've just got one question, actually. The first student pricing performance seems to be very, very good. I mean, you couple that with the retention rate, which to me feels extremely good at 99%. I'm just curious as to basically how you've been able to put through such a big price increase and retain the contract. Is it, you know, property taxation means school boards are feeling better about life? Is it, you know, competition from some of your slightly weaker peers has lessened? Or how have you been able to put through such strong numbers?
Okay, and morning. First of all, let me be absolutely clear on the retention rate. The retention rate is 90%. So 90%, not 99%, I think you just commented. We get back to effectively flat revenue by taking that 90% retention. And then the other effectively 10% comes from share shifts. We continue to see organic growth on our routes from a small bolt-on acquisition in New York. It's how we get back to flat. So, and that's 90% of the contracts that were up for bid. And I know different players quote different numbers. So what I also said is that if you look at that across our overall portfolio, i.e. including those, the two-thirds that were not out for bid, that's how you get to the 96%. So I hope that's clear. In terms of how we did it, I mean, there was a very detailed process that I've talked about before with a team from the center, from student center, and also the individual businesses. And that's what I found so pleasing about the whole process is it really just demonstrated the strength of the group that we all worked together. And it was a massive, massive exercise as we went through each and every contract. We looked at the value of that contract to our customers. And I think it's well known that we are a very high-quality supplier. Our customers really value what we do. We have the best safety statistics. And we use that when we were discussing with our customers. So that was part of how we got the price increase. The other element was that I think it's fair to say that the market has improved. If you look at school board finances, and obviously it varies by region, but they are now back to pre-recession levels. So that certainly helped. It didn't mean that the discussions were always easy, but I think it was that. And I think also if you look back to the issue that effectively rose last year, it came from the fact that price rises in previous years had been on the low side and was not covering inflation. So it was all a mixture of those different elements that fed into effectively the equation that allowed us to achieve the success that we did.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Anand.
Once again, as a gentle reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone. Your next question comes from the line of Gerald Coe. Please ask your question.
Hi, just a quick follow-up on UK bus. There's been some talk about quality contracts in West Yorkshire. I was wondering if you could sort of update us on what the current situation there is, please.
Yeah, quality contracts have been talked about for quite some time. We much prefer, and I know the terminology is somewhat confusing, but quality partnerships where we're working alongside the authority to provide, obviously, the best service, the best package, the best value for customers. And certainly when we look at the likes of what we've seen in South Yorkshire, that has gone down extremely well. And certainly if you look at the North East in particular, and Nexus and so on, who talk about quality contracts, obviously that doesn't affect us because we're not directly in that area. But again, those people have been looking at that, have also been looking at what we've been doing with quality partnerships, and again, looking at how they propose that. So our argument has not changed at all during this period. It's been the same for quite some time now, that our view is it's better to work on a partnership basis that will drive the best value for the customer.
So just to clarify, in West Yorkshire, is this just the usual talk, or is there a formal process or consultation underway?
Well, Gerald, there has been discussions in the past, as you know, and there was a somewhat an interest from West Yorkshire to look at an alternative structure. But we believe that the operators have made a good case for quality partnerships. And as Chris said, using South Yorkshire as an example, we do seem to be in a reasonably good place there. And, of course, all the work we're doing in transforming our bus operations, our commercial proposition becoming much more responsive to local markets, and the work we've done on fares has all helped to support that. So I don't think there is any particular move in West Yorkshire, no particular update at the moment.
Okay, thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Joe Spooner. Please ask the question.
Morning, guys. I guess there's been three rail decisions that unfortunately have been decided against you over the course of this year. When you look back at that, have you got any sense of what aspect of those bids you've been beaten on? And I guess as a follow-up to that, did you change the approach that you had to that bidding when you put your East Coast submission in? Thank you.
Joe, morning. Each, obviously, franchising competition is different. I mean, if you put ScotRail aside, I think the very simple answer to your first one was price. And there was a significant difference between the price that we bid and what the eventual winners did. Again, just on our general approach, and we've said this on many occasions in the past, we bid very hard. We bid ambitious plans, we bid ambitious prices, but we are very disciplined in our approach, and we need to be absolutely clear in our minds that we can deliver on our commitments, and that is the basis of bidding. ScotRail, I think, is slightly different, and in that case, and again, obviously, the news is very, very new. We were told late last night by Transport for Scotland, but it appears from what we've seen so far is that the price of the various bids was very, very close. So there isn't a wild card outside of there. Clearly, until we've looked at our bid versus obviously the winning bid and looked at what was put in there in terms of investment in trains, alliancing, cost, and so on, it's hard for us to actually say yet what the differences were on that particular bid. In terms of your question on East Coast, we put the East Coast bid in the middle of June, and certainly that was put in before the more recent outcomes. And our position on East Coast is exactly what I said in my opening comments on this, which is we put in an ambitious bid, we want to win it, but we have put in a bid on a disciplined basis and one that we are very, very confident of delivering should we win it.
Bearing in mind your comments that you want to build a £100 million rail business, but at an acceptable level of risk, I mean, are the prices that you're being beaten on, is the market at a level of risk that is acceptable to you, or are we at a risk here that actually others are prepared to have a little bit more risk appetite around these things?
I think the reality is that we've had a small number of bids so far. There's still a lot of bids to go. It is too early to say, and I don't think we have seen a trend anyway. I mean, there's always the argument about if you're incumbent, you'll never win, and that's certainly been when you've looked at what's happened so far in the first three bids. That's not the case. So I just don't think we have seen a major shift in that. Obviously, we'll see what happens in the future. But in terms of, I think, your implied question of can we get to 100 million, I go back to what I said earlier. That's two big talks, and it's a small to medium-sized talk. Obviously, any extension on First Great Western, that's clearly a very big talk. Should we win East Coast? Clearly a very big talk. And then we've got TPE, which has got an extension that we're talking about, as I said, through to 16. And then there's obviously all the other franchises that are coming up, which is why, yes, we are very disappointed to lose ScotRail, but it is, as I say, towards the lower end of a small talk, and there are all these other opportunities out there, which is why, although disappointed, We are not changing our medium-term targets because we're confident of delivering them.
Thanks very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Mike Stoddart. Please ask your question.
Morning. Apologies if I missed this at the start of the call, but have you given us any guidance as to the profit contribution from ScotRail in its last year? That's one. And secondly, what is the likelihood of a ratings downgrade because of the loss of ScotRail? Thank you.
Morning, Mike. Thanks. No, we didn't say that at the start. We tend not to be very specific on individual franchise profitability, but on ScotRail, it was very low single digits, teens. Sorry, get my teeth in. So
right.
Low teens in terms of profit, which is why I say, although we're disappointed, it doesn't really move the dial in terms of our overall targets. In terms of rating, the way, and that's obviously clearly for the rating agencies to speak for themselves, but the way the rating agencies look at the cash that's in these contracts is the ring-fenced cash is not generally accounted for the calculations. So in our view, this does not change the overall ratings.
Right, but surely the loss of the profit contribution will have some bearing on their view.
But again, I come back to Mike, it is a very small number in the context of the overall profitability for the group. And again, you have to look at what will happen in the future.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Alexia Dogani. Please ask your question.
Yeah, good morning. I just had two quick questions. Just firstly, can you update us on your fuel hedging position for this year and FY16 in particular? And I guess in the context of the recent sort of oil price move, are you looking to lock in some of that benefit earlier perhaps? And then is it just possible to explain the direct award sort of process at the moment? I mean, is it fair to expect that we will hear more on First Great Western or TransPennine post the general elections, or is it your working assumption that we may basically find something out on this side of the year? Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Alexia. Good morning. On fuel hedging, our policy is that we are fully hedged out 1 year, and then we have a rolling hedging process for the second year as we build out the as we hedge out into the subsequent years, and we do that on a rolling basis. So every month we increase the amount that we hedge. So overall, at the moment, we are more or less fully hedged for 15, 16, we would be about 75, north of 75% hedged in the UK. So that's on UK rail, bus, fuel costs. And then in the US, in 15, 16, around a little bit less than 60%. So again, obviously, we're very cognizant of the fact that fuel costs are relatively low at the moment, and that goes into our thinking. But just to be very clear, our focus is on stability, and we are not speculators in different hedging rates. In terms of First Great Western and TPE, those will be announced before the election.
That's our expectation.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Kunli Zhu. Please ask your question.
Hi. Most of my questions have been answered, but actually just going back on your response on the ScotRail operating profit in the low teens, that sounds rather high. I would have thought a low single digit is where you would be in general, so if you could maybe give a bit more detail.
I don't know how to answer that. It is what it is, and each individual contract is different. But it's, yeah, it's low teens, it's the profitability.
I think if you think about...
maybe I'm misunderstanding your point. Nick, sorry.
Yeah, you tend to make profit on the passenger revenue part of the franchise. ScotRail has a passenger revenue of around about $300 million.
Mm-hmm.
So a 3 to 5% margin on $300 million will give you a number in that sort of area.
I'm sorry, say that again. I didn't quite understand that.
Yeah, you make profit typically on the passenger revenue part of the revenue.
Mm-hmm.
ScotRail has a revenue of around passenger revenue of around about £300 million.
Mm-hmm.
Typically, franchises make 3 to 5% margin, 4 to 5% margin. Well, 4 to 5% margin of $300 million is in the range that Chris described.
Oh, I see. I'm sorry. I was thinking that the low teens is a percentage rate, which seemed enormously high.
I understand your question.
You're talking absolute operation.
Yeah, no, I was talking millions of pounds.
Okay. All right, great. Thank
sorry,
you very much.
I apologize. Now
Thank
I understand
you.
Your question.
Perfect.
Okay.
There are no further questions at this time. Please continue.
Okay, thank you very much, Martin. Thank you, everybody. Speak to you soon. Thanks. Bye-bye.
That does conclude our conference for today. You may all participating.